Welcome to the Veterinary Viewfinder. This week, do you really want to go into the veterinary profession? It seems like everyone at some time during their life wants to be a veterinarian or a veterinary technician. But is that a good idea in 2017? Today, we want to explore why we became veterinarians and veterinary technicians, the student debt dilemma, and what some of the potential solutions are for the future. I'm Dr. Ernie Ward, and I'm joined, as always, by co-host Dr. Cindy Courtney and registered veterinary technician Becky Mosser.
And what better way to kick it off than to take a look at how we found ourselves right here in the veterinary profession? For me, I would say I was a late joiner to the profession personally. Even though growing up, my grandfather always told me he saw me working with animals, either as a veterinarian or a farmer. I'm going to argue he didn't quite know what a veterinary technician was back then. But there I was, 20-some years old and tired of jumping from non-skilled job to another and always wanted to work with animals. And I landed in vet tech school just about 20 miles down the road from where I was living, one of the top in our state. And that's how I ended up here. Dr. Cindy, how about you?
Yeah, I was not one of those typical young girls who always knew they wanted to be a veterinarian. I loved medicine, I loved science, and I always loved animals, but somehow that didn't come together for me as a young person until I started working at a pet store when I was a young teenager. And I fell in love with helping pet owners solve problems with their pets or hear their problems with their pets. To be frank, I probably shouldn't have been giving as much advice as I do. And it actually helps me talk with clients now about what those young folks at the pet stores do and don't understand. But that's what gave me the clue that I might want to get involved in the veterinary profession, and the rest is history. How about you, Dr. Ward?
I was one of those veterinarians that knew I wanted to be a vet from a very early age. As I always joke, I knew I wanted to be a vet since I was knee-high to a grasshopper. And for me, I grew up in a rural, you know, environment. All of my family farmed. In fact, most of them still do. My parents were the first people to leave the farm and actually go to school. And so I've always wanted to be a vet. Tell me a little bit more, though, about you're working in a pet store. What really was that attraction that said, I want to go and incur debt and go to school and all these hardships?
I was definitely not one of these college students who went into the veterinary field and an understanding of veterinary debt blind. I was fortunate enough to have parents who, little known to me at the time, actually my mother hid this from me intentionally. She had wanted to be a veterinarian, didn't do well in the sciences, and didn't end up going that direction.
Wow.
Didn't tell that to me until after I graduated from vet school, but she encouraged me to get a second degree on top of biology while I was in college. And so I actually went to business school in addition to getting my biology major. I got a marketing major as well. So I took finance classes, I took accounting classes, I understood what debt meant. I knew how to look at interest rates and understand debt. So I went in with my eyes wide open.
Becky, Cindy brings up a really interesting aspect of sort of what I call the new vets. And that is they came to college, they discovered veterinary medicine late. They've got additional skills and experience that people like maybe you and I don't. How is it on the veterinary technician side of things? I mean, are you seeing technicians that sort of come to it later in life with different experiences?
You know, I think we have a really cool mix of that right now in the profession. I know when I was teaching, I had students, my youngest student in the classroom at one time was 19 and the oldest was 55. So I had an incredibly diverse age range to deal with. And I think we have that in the profession. Do you think we have a lot of younger folks coming in and joining our profession? Because I think the veterinary technician profession holds a lot of appeal when you look at student debt and some of those types of factors.
You see a lot of young people, and I'm guessing like me, you go into schools, elementary schools, middle schools, and so forth. You're talking to them. You're seeing every hand raised when you say, who wants to be a veterinarian or a veterinary technician? What's your advice?
Honestly, if you want to be a veterinarian, be a veterinarian, because veterinary technicians are not veterinarian wannabes, right? So we don't always get into our profession just because we didn't want to go to vet school or we couldn't get into vet school. It's a separate profession with a separate passion and a separate drive. So if you really want to be a veterinarian, then I encourage students to pursue that. However, I think that the knowledge about our profession in general isn't out there. So I would say before you go to vet school, here's something you might want to consider.
I love that. Now, Cindy, every single veterinarian I ever worked for or worked with or consulted gave me one singular piece of advice, and that was, you don't want to go into veterinary medicine. What was your experience?
Oh my gosh. That was not my experience at all, which is probably a good thing since that might have had me go in the other direction. I take the same approach myself that I think I got from the veterinarians who mentored me, and that was to be very upfront about the pros and cons. And just as when I talk with others, I want to be very upfront about the effort it takes intellectually to get into veterinary school. I try and be upfront with people about the effort it takes financially to get into veterinary school and emotionally that it takes to get into veterinary school. And I don't think that that's necessarily scaring people away. I don't think that pushes me into a place where I tell people not to pursue this path, but I want to talk about the pros and cons.
Love that, Cindy. Love that. The generation ahead of me is like, don't go into vet medicine. It's terrible. It's awful, you know. And now your generation is experiencing people like me as mentors, and we're saying, hey, this can be a really fulfilling profession as long as you understand what you're getting into. Becky, what is, in your opinion, the one thing that surprised you most about the veterinary technician profession that, you know, you came into it with wide eyes and optimism, but the reality was different?
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of things I think in general, but I would say one of the largest things that stood out to me was my rose-colored glasses of, you know, how valuable we are and how important we are to the team, and finding out that we would have to sort of be our own cheerleaders a lot of time in practice. And that was a real wake-up call for me.
And if I might answer that question too, in terms of what did you find when you got in that you didn't expect? For me, it was decision fatigue. You know, I had been a veterinary assistant before I went and became a veterinarian. And it's very different being on the other side of that, being the one who you make the final call. It feels different.
Right. And I think that the biggest misperception I get when I'm speaking to, you know, young students, children, even college age students, is the fact that we really don't spend as much time with our pet patients or animal patients as you might imagine. The majority of my day, and probably of yours, Cindy, and Becky's as well, is dealing with people, either our staff, our clients. Somehow we're dealing with humans. And I think that I do worry sometimes people get into this profession because they want to escape human interaction, and yet that's exactly what we do.
I find personally that, you know, to your point, that was one of the things that drove me to being a veterinary technician. I looked in the hospitals and I saw my veterinarian poring over paperwork and spending a lot of time on the phone with clients, and the veterinary technicians in the practices were the ones getting to curl up in the crate with the dogs and recover surgery and be really hands-on. And that's actually really what drove me to choosing to be a veterinary technician.
Wow, Becky, I am so glad you said that, because I think that too often we overlook the importance of the technicians, and you really don't understand how intimate you are when it comes to patient care. So if you're listening today, if you have a young person in your life who's considering entering the veterinary profession, please do not discount veterinary technicians.
And I'd like to add, when you're building those skills, if you're interested in becoming a veterinarian or a veterinary technician, build teamwork skills, because medicine is definitely a team sport. I loved learning about how, even in human medicine, how the Mayo Clinic works. They get input from every single person on the team. When you're striving to help patients get better, you can't afford to miss a single person's opinion or a single person's observation. So I can't tell you how many times a technician's input or even a receptionist's input has helped us get to the right answer on a patient's case.
And, you know, Cindy, that's a great point, and one that I think has been lost largely in our profession. We have attracted, in fact, we've encouraged people who are lone individualists, who are very good at taking tests and maybe not having those social or soft skills that are really required to be successful in practice. You know, it's funny, when I look back on my graduating class from 25 years ago, the people who had the best social, emotional communication skills have done significantly better. And even more importantly, they seem to enjoy what they're doing 25 years later more than the people who were at the top of the class.
And I find some of those team skills even in school, and I'll ask you guys whether you found this to be the case in your educational experiences in college and in vet and vet tech school, were hugely helpful to being successful in vet school too. I mean, studying together, helping each other out was a huge help to me.
My experience was unfortunately the opposite. I think I came along during an era when, you know, there was intense pressure on the grades, so there wasn't really that camaraderie and shared sense of purpose that I think we see today.
When I was in tech school, we really did have a good unified front, sort of between sections. I always remember there being like a Section A and Section B kind of thing, but we started with 64 students and graduated 20. So by the end of tech school, you really were tight with kind of the survivors.
Yeah. And I think, again, it illustrates a generational shift. I went to school during an era when the baby boomers were in charge. Cindy, you've gone to school when really more of the Generation X influenced your outlook on the profession. And I just can't wait for future generations, because I think it's only going to get better. Before we talk about getting better, there's a big elephant in the room, and it comes with a hefty price tag, and that is student debt. I mean, when you look at some of the recent estimates, Cindy, students are graduating with a debt load between $130,000 and $200,000. Certainly, I know students who are graduating with $250,000 to $300,000 in debt. Is that sustainable, Cindy?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And one of the biggest things I think we forget is anytime you join a profession, again, it's impossible to know exactly what being a professional is like until you go and do it. Veterinary schools try and help prepare you as much as possible, but when you're taking on an education with that big a price tag and making it that difficult to pay it back, you can end up feeling very trapped in the profession, and that's dangerous.
Are the schools doing enough to educate prospective students, and what more could they do?
Yeah, well, and one of the things I'll admit that I don't understand enough is exactly where the legal limitations are. You know, what are they allowed to say and not say when people are interested in the program? And, you know, exactly how far back are they reaching when they talk to folks? But they have specific numbers when they say, you know, you should ideally walk out of vet school only having X amount of debt compared to the average starting salary. And I believe that number is about 60,000. And so when we're talking to students, should we be saying, what is your game plan to walk out of vet school with only $60,000 worth of debt? What is the plan? And do those students have that plan?
Becky, from a veterinary technician standpoint, this has always been a tremendous challenge for you, because you are looking at technicians that are making the same amount of pay as people with no credentials, no licensing, no education. What's your take on that, and what can be done to solve that?
Oh, gosh, you know, it hurts to hear it out loud, even though I know it, even after 10 years, you know, that's the reality. Luckily, we don't incur quite as much debt, obviously, we know. And so that is a little bit, you know, less financially strapping for us. But I think that we, you know, have to, we attract more population who have children, perhaps, and have to arrange for daycare. And, you know, I don't know. I think that we've got to find some better solutions. And whether you come out of school with $60,000 of debt, $2,000 of debt, or $200,000, you have to have a plan for it to be manageable debt for you.
What is your message to the person out there who's listening to this today and they're going, listen, why would I go get a degree when I make the same amount of money without it?
You know, I can't tell you how many times I've had to answer that question, and it's hard for me to say because it's professional and not personal, but I answer that by saying because I'm working very hard to make sure that changes.
Wow, it's a tough dilemma, and I'll tell you, if you're listening today, it is very important for our profession that we get credentialed, licensed support staff, because that's the only way that we can actually convey additional value and importance to the public. And quite frankly, I think it's one of safety, efficacy. Cindy, getting back to that, you're now talking to middle school children, and every hand is raised. I want to be a vet. I want to be a vet. Is the next thing out of your mouth, are you ready to write a check for $300,000?
No, it's not necessarily always the first thing out of my mouth. And I think there are also age-related pieces of information that we can give to people. So I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing while we're having the same conversation with a first grader to say, well, you'd better study really hard if you want to be a vet. If you're saying that, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing to say, well, you'd better save your pennies if you want to be a vet. I mean, we're not necessarily going to say it's financially unfeasible, but starting to have conversations early is helpful. I might have made some other decisions if I had been thinking about it before college. I might have decided to go to a undergraduate university where I had a full ride so that I could have had some more money to set aside for vet school. So the earlier we start talking about it, I think the better.
Absolutely. And I'm shocked and awed by the number of veterinary school students that when I'm speaking to them, they say this, you know, Ernie, that's great, but I didn't get into this profession for the money. And I say, neither did I. However, the difference between now and 25 years ago is your debt. And your debt will determine the direction of your life. So if you're graduating with $150,000, $200,000, $250,000 in debt, it is going to influence your ability to buy a car, to buy a house, to have children, to pay for your children's college education. I mean, this is significant debt, especially in light of poor income. So Cindy, how do we answer that?
Yeah. One of the challenges I've faced and experienced is that understanding what debt means as a young person is difficult because you cannot experience emotionally what debt means as a young person right. In the same way as when you're on the other side of actually having to pay it. You know, when you have a spouse and you are having to put all or most of your income toward your debt instead of contributing toward savings, instead of contributing toward the family's income, that feels extremely different than you imagine it will when it's just a number on a piece of paper. And I do think, again, when we're discussing the pros and cons, when we're talking to people about preparing financially for vet school, we need to talk about those emotions we're experiencing with those students as well. I think that's fair. And again, I don't think it has to be at a level where we feel like we're scaring them away, but saying, you know, if you were choosing to be an artist, if you were choosing to be a teacher, what decision are you making in choosing to go down the road in that profession?
That's a great point. And the other part of this is, again, that generational shift. You'll hear older veterinarians, generation, you know, before me, the baby boomers, say the problem with you young folks, the millennials, is you're spending too much money. So you're there borrowing all this money and then driving fancy cars, eating out at fancy restaurants. And I say, no way. That is not the problem. The real problem that we're facing is twofold. One, the staggering rise in tuition. I mean, tuition today costs multiple times more than it did 25 years ago when I was a student. The second thing is incomes haven't kept up. So, Becky, you're looking at it from the other side of our profession. What advice do you have for young people that are maybe interested in the veterinary profession when we're talking about all this debt and income problem? And what do you say?
Well, you know, if we're already at a point where we can't have plan for it, then do your research. Find out what resources are available to you because there are a lot of resources out there. There are some sex equity levels in our profession right now, which work great for males who are trying to become veterinary technicians because they're not currently the prominent gender in our profession. So do some research. There are ways to get help with school and there are ways to come out of school debt-free. But like we said in the beginning, have a plan. Don't just jump in because this isn't the profession to come out with where you have to pay a giant bill left over from school.
And I think one piece I get worried about when I hear the student debt discussion come up over and over is the different interested parties, the schools, the veterinarians, the students, industry, everybody blames each other. Everybody says, well, you should be doing this. Well, you should be doing that. I think it's time for us all to own our piece of the puzzle and to start taking action on our piece of the puzzle. because if we keep blaming each other, nothing's going to move and nothing's going to happen. I will point out that the AVMA did have a summit on student debt, and there are some veterinary schools out there that are actually positioning themselves and trying to market themselves as low debt schools and trying to innovate in this area. And I'm glad to see that happening. I know the VBMA, the Student Business Organization, has been talking about this for a long, long time. So there is movement on these issues. It just needs to be faster in my mind.
I'm currently taking some online classes at UNC Pembroke, and they have a cool program where your tuition is broken up over the semester. And that's made a huge difference for me, just in the difference of paying a little bit at a time over the 4 months, as opposed to paying one big giant chunk at a time. So universities are being innovative, and we're excited to hear what kind of ideas or what you guys have encountered out there in managing student debt and the ways that you guys have handled it.
So Cindy, you mentioned one possible solution, that is reducing tuition. Some of the veterinary schools are actually now being, you know, proactive and saying, hey, come to our school because it'll cost you less money. What are some other solutions?
Yeah. So again, I focus primarily on what we can do individually. And through this conversation, I've talked about what we as veterinarians can do in preparing others. I think we individually can be more attuned to financial planning once we get out of school, reaching out to independent financial planners to try and manage our own money and get that debt down as soon as possible so that we can help our families. Talking with folks about that number, what is that number we should be walking out of vet school with? If it is something where you're not going into the profession for the money, it may make sense to do a different job for a couple of years to save money before you get involved in the first place. I am interested to hear more about alternative models of schooling. I know our school got a brand new MRI while I was at vet school at Virginia Tech. I am never going to sit in front of an MRI and evaluate it myself personally. So I am a little miffed that some of my tuition dollars went for paying for that MRI in all likelihood. So I do think there are a lot of ways we can all come together and discuss changes.
Yeah, and I think we have to tackle, as you mentioned, the variables that we can control. The big variable that we can't control is the cost of our services. That is what we pass on, what we charge our clients. I mean, there is a limit, a ceiling to what the public will pay for our services. So I think sometimes I get frustrated when I'm in these discussions and people are like, we just have to raise our fees more. And it's like, you know, I think that was 15 years ago, but in 2017 and moving forward, we're probably nearing some limits. So let's get back to what we can control, and that is tuition inflation and sort of what it means to become a veterinarian. You know, I certainly have been outspoken for the past 20 years about changing the actual pathway to become a veterinarian. I mean, it's no secret. I got into vet school early after 3 years of undergrad, so that tremendously helped reduce my debt load. I think you're seeing movement in other schools to allow you to get early admission after 2 and 3 years. I really think the profession is going to have to do more than just have this little convention, this little, you know, meeting summit. We're going to have to actually start to move. And I love the schools that are saying, let's take a look. Becky, what are your thoughts on solutions for this student debt so that we can attract those middle schoolers that are the top and going to be the movers and shakers of tomorrow?
One thing I think we could really do is work a little bit closer with the veterinary technician colleges for those people who are working on their undergrad or working on a pre-vet program so that they can be attending community colleges and receiving really good basic level education and be even certified as veterinary technicians and have the ability to work their way through vet school as a great way to have a certified trade while they're working through vet school and making good money, but maybe reducing some of their costs on the undergrad.
Wow, that's a great solution. And then the other variable that we can control, quite simply, is the supply. We were producing too many veterinarians for what I thought the future. There's a couple of inflection points that we're nearing, and I think that we're starting to see that. So schools, we need to listen to the market and understand that if we continue to pump out this many students, are we going to be oversupplying the market? Again, a lot of different opinions, a lot of different, you know, concerns at stake here. Cindy, you mentioned it before. Schools are in this to make money and so forth, but I am concerned about future oversupply.
And we've given a lot of advice in how we think that this problem should be solved, but we did want to wrap up today by focusing on advice that we've gotten in the past. One of the very best pieces of advice I got in regards to being a good veterinarian, I got from a practice owner who'd been practicing for nearly 30 years when I was a veterinary assistant working under him. And that was to never, ever discount the client's opinion. That often, if a client is coming to you and saying that something is off with their pet, something is wrong, not to just shake your head and say, hey, I can't find anything, your pet must be fine. Often, whether it's going to be 2 days from now or 2 years from now, that pet might come in with something and it may have just been subclinical at that time. And to respect the client, what they're feeling, what their emotions are, and that they're the expert on their pet. What about you guys? What is some of the best advice you've ever gotten?
The best advice that I've sort of received indirectly and then made it my own personal philosophy is this: treat every patient like it's your only patient. You have to learn to intensely focus and be in the moment, stay in the present, listen, as Cindy is saying. Really pay close attention to the nonverbal cues that are occurring all around you in that room. It's easy to be distracted by the busyness of the day. You've got, all types of challenges. You've got cases coming in. You've got a hard surgery or a case that's failing. You have to learn psychologically, emotionally, and physically how to remain in that moment and treat every patient like it is your only patient. If you can do that, you will be a success in so many ways.
I think for me, one of the best things I ever remember hearing along my profession was a saying, there's room for everyone. And playing to Dr. Cindy's point earlier, everyone's opinion, everyone's observations are important, and to listen to everybody equally, because everyone on the team plays a very important role, and to never forget that.
You've heard our views, now we'd like to hear yours. Tell us what you tell those elementary school students who raise their hand when they say, I want to be a veterinarian. What do you think we should do about the student debt problem? And what are the solutions for the future of our profession?
Follow us on Facebook at Veterinary Viewfinder and on Twitter at Vet Viewfinder.
Thank you for listening. See you next week for another great episode of the Veterinary Viewfinder, when we talk about veterinary team members as pet owners. Do we really practice what we preach?